What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that stands with the St Albans City mascot, or Wobbles. Coming up, a big weekend in the Championship season. Southampton bear will still no ill will, but still, there's no will to stand still, so we'll still have to make the decision to part ways with Will Still. Elsewhere, it's more as Kiefer's perfect hat-trick sinks Sky Blues and divine intervention returns to Stoke. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And this is a mostly Championship show, or an entirely Championship show even for us this week, listener. Quick turnaround with some midweek games, so we're here to chat through the moments that mattered in Tier 2 from the weekend. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I've got my two podcasting pals with me. Adrian Clark, how much did you enjoy watching Sammy the Saint do his best to try and stay upright at Burton on Saturday?
It was one of the highlights of the weekend for me. Yeah, I mean, obviously him being a saint or not so saintly was pretty funny. Yeah, up against the Brewers. It was absolutely perfect, wasn't it? Must have been totally leathered. I mean, I don't know what Sam thinks. How could that happen before the game? I mean, what do you think happened there, Sam?
What time was kickoff?
It was 3 o'clocker, wasn't it?
3 o'clocker. Yeah. What are we talking from St Albans? 2.5?
No, not even that, I don't reckon, but yeah.
I'm just a little bit disappointed that Sammy the Saint, is it? Was on my doorstep when I was living in Hertfordshire, and I never went down to see him in action. Missed a trick there, my fellow Samuel.
You rather suspect there might be somebody else wearing the outfit next week. No action has been taken and nothing has been confirmed. You know, maybe just couldn't see through the costume or something. We shall wait and see for further developments on that. That was Sam Parkin, by the way. So we are at full strength for today's pod. Before we get to our Championship mega review, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. So that's it then. No more Will Still puns / tortured intros. Southampton sacked the Belgian on Sunday night following their latest defeat. This time it was playoff chasing Preston, who won 2-0 at St Mary's. In a club statement, group technical director Johannes Spors said, "Will is a great person who gave everything to try and improve performances and results. Ultimately, that process has taken longer than any of us would have liked. By making a change now, we believe it gives us the best chance of turning things around this season and climbing back up the league table." Sam, I'll ask Adrian about the Southampton angle, but in terms of Will Still, you feel sorry for the guy, almost like it was a hiding for nothing. But is this another case where maybe the manager in question should have done a bit more due diligence on the job that he was taking? I only ask that because I wonder how he gets another job in English football, and it was always going to be difficult turning around the second worst team in Premier League history.
Yeah, I think he will still get another job in English football. I think, yeah, bad timing, basically going into a club that is bearing the scars of the Premier League relegation and not a lot of unity between supporters and Sport Republic. They're getting a lot of the flack as well, aren't they? The ownership kind of model along with the manager. Clearly, a lot of the new signings haven't particularly worked. I think he's been unlucky because of one of those two victories. Obviously, they were fortuitous with the opening day victory against Wrexham, and the reality is they've only won two games. The one at Sheffield United was a bit of a masterclass from Ross Stewart, who's now injured. That I felt, and I probably said on the podcast a fortnight ago, that could be a turning point in his fortunes, and unfortunately he's been injured, and the chaps that they've had to come in, Downs, clearly the centre forward, hasn't worked. But yeah, I think I maybe said it last week, he's been held in such high esteem, and from afar, everyone has known about this guy's work. I'm a little bit surprised that they pulled the trigger this early, but again, to contradict myself, the results, you know, two wins at this stage of the season, that is desperately poor. But I just think the reputation that he's garnered over his time overseas will lead itself to get him another gig. I'm pretty confident that he'll get another good club. And I just think, on what you said, Matt, it's such an attractive job still. Southampton is such a big club, so well supported, and if they get it right, they'll get back in the Premier League, I'm sure, in time and be successful once more. But it's been a catalogue of poor appointments, probably, hasn't it, around Russell Martin, who I read last night is rumoured to maybe be someone that they're looking at prizing again. I mean, imagine him coming back in and getting them up the table, or maybe even getting them promoted next year. What do they do if they get back in the Premier League? Do they stick with Russell Martin Ball, or would they roll the dice again? It's very unclear what the future holds, but I think Will Steele will be absolutely fine in getting another decent gig.
Important appointment though, isn't it, for the club, Clark? As Sam says, it's the ownership and those in senior positions who seem to be getting most of the sticks. So you want to deflect from that, but more immediately, you want to make sure you don't do a Luton and drop two divisions in as many seasons.
Yeah, there is a prospect of that happening. I really severely doubt it would. Some of the data is actually quite positive. Only one team's got more expected goals than Southampton this season. That's Coventry. Surprise, surprise. So they have created lots of good chances, but they've not been good enough without the ball. I don't think there's any doubt about that. A little bit too open. They've made a lot of individual errors. I don't think they've really got a clear identity. And obviously that's something that they did have under Russell Martin, a very clear identity. And it just felt like, are they a possession team? Are they not a possession team? Counter-attacks, short passes. What are they, basically? Different shapes as well, we saw from Will Steele. So, yeah, I think a manager that's got a clearer idea of what they want to do is probably for the best. I don't think Russell Martin's the worst idea. I don't. he brings with him, even though he's had obviously a catastrophe at Glasgow Rangers, he brings with him an aura of the guy that took them into the Premier League, playing a certain brand of football. If he can stomach going back and trying again, I think it might work. I don't know.
Yeah, just before we move on, I wanted to say another ingredient. Obviously, I mean, the despondent noises coming out of St Mary's, if ever an atmosphere had turned toxic, I think...
Power Road-esque almost.
Yeah. And King Power-esque as well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, and just a line on Preston, so thrilled to see Story, Lindsay, Hughes steal the back three for Preston. I mean, we have been talking about them. It's got to be 5 years. Yeah. And what a save from Everson. And I don't like applauding goalkeepers too regularly on this podcast, but I think it was Yander with a curling effort. Mm. And even though I knew the score, watching the highlights, I thought it was in. It was an incredible fingertip save from Everson.
Yeah, four big chances Preston had in this game. Southampton had none. It wasn't lucky. This was a totally deserved win.
All right, I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll go through all the managers under pressure in their games in that order as we roll on with our mega championship review. And the division is positively riddled with under-pressure managers at the moment. Liam Manning right at the forefront of that particular movement after Hull City won at Norwich for only the second time in 53 years. Game briefly held up when home fans threw tennis balls onto the pitch in protest at plans to move 3,000 supporters as part of their redevelopment Carrow Road. That's something we're seeing more and more as well across the leagues, isn't it, as well? There's stiff competition for this, Clarky, but is there a more bad vibes club in the Championship at the moment than Norwich? I thought that Josh Sargent miss of an open goal at 0-0 kind of sum things up. XG of 2.52, no goals, 6 straight league defeat. It's not going great.
They battered Hull for 45 minutes. They were all over them, played well, created chance. Obviously, that big, big miss from Sargent was a huge sort of crossroads moment in the match. So they're not a total disaster, Norwich City. But when you've lost as many games as they have this season at home, then it just takes one little mistake for everything to crumble, and I think that's what's happening. They've lost every home game, every single match they've played at home in the Championship. They've got beaten. I think they've got beaten in one of their cup games as well. So that's going to make them feel very uncomfortable, isn't it? And as soon as that mistake happens, was it just after half time when the goalie and Harry Darling sort of both at fault, really? I think the keeper should come off his line earlier. Defenders should do better as well. And Gilhart sticks it in. And it's just from that moment on, you know the crowd are against you. You know it's toxic. And yeah, there were three stadiums where this was the case. It really stood out, didn't it? Boos at the goals, boos at St Mary's when the opposition scored, boos at Norwich, boos at Leicester. It's difficult, really difficult. Yeah, Liam Manning's a good coach, we know that, same as Will Steele. He's a very good coach, but it's just not happening. He hasn't sorted them out defensively. They're off the ball workers is a little bit muddled, and And for that reason, he probably will lose his job before the next game, I would imagine. But if they, you know, he might get one more crack, but he's got to be on the edge. I mean, any manager that's lost every home game has got to be close to the axe, I think.
Sergei Yakirovich, Sam. I find it difficult to say his name. Do you want to put some respect on it? Hull are only a place outside the playoffs.
Yeah, they're a good watch, Hull. You know, they're very, very open. Norwich should have been out of sight probably in the first half, and I think that's been the case on a few occasions because they give up so many chances. Highest, you know, XG against, they're conceding the most shots by a distance in the division, so no surprise really that they were under pressure given what was at stake at Carrow Road, and so many good chances. But yeah, I like the 11. I think the depth is probably where Hull are going to ultimately probably fall slightly short. I mean, the two goals were just perfect for adding to the toxicity at the ground. Do you know what I mean? The first one just limped over the line, and then JB second, he fluffed the first from like 6 yards, and then he mishit the left foot. It was just perfect to see the mass exodus in the home stands. But yeah, I enjoyed watching them against Leicester. They, in that game against Leicester at home, I know they won three straight now, I think, Hull. But I think in that, they've certainly been on a brilliant run.
13 points from the last five games.
Yeah.
Four wins and a draw.
They just, I suppose, dropped their tempo towards the latter stage against Leicester and were really hanging in towards the end. And I just think that's the difference between the teams that are going to be in the top six and maybe these teams that have had a bright start to the season. It's have they got the capability to motor all the way to the end of the season with maybe slight limitations in the squad in comparison. But no, they've had a brilliant start, and some of the lads like Joseph, Gelhart, have had really bright starts to the season. And I would always question if Hull have got enough goals, creativity in their armoury. Those chaps have had a really bright start to the season.
They've had a bright start. Leicester are fading fast. Another defeat for them, 2-0 at home against Blackburn. According to the BBC match report, taunts were aimed at under pressure Leicester boss Marty Sifuentes. Love the word taunts, don't hear it. Anyway, near often enough. That said, Clarkey, it says chance of Marty sort it out could be heard. I'm not sure that's a taunt or a plea, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, more of a play, yeah.
But either way, this isn't good enough, is it? One win in eight games. I mean, I feel like at the start of the season, we big them up as having maybe the best squad in the division. You'd never know it from looking at the table.
No, I just feel that this group of players needs gutting, unfortunately. Like, the issue I think Leicester fans have got, and I'm with them on it, is that they gave up the ghost last season. When things got hard for them, they had no desire, no determination. There was an acceptance under Ruud van Nistelrooy that we're getting beat here. I mean, it's going to get worse. And this same group of players are now showing that trait in the Championship, and that's not on, really. Good manager again, Martin Sifuentes, who's done well at QPR. Yeah, he has made some strange decisions. I think some selection has been questioned a number of times. I think in this game, Christensen came in at left back for Thomas, who made a mistake at Millwall. Well, Christensen isn't very popular among the Leicester supporters. They don't think he's good enough, and he got roasted for the first goal. So that's a selection that's backfired. You know, there's been issues at centre-back, central midfield. The punters, you know, they want Winks with James. And then, you know, someone else maybe at number 10, but they've had Jordan James at 10. And Samare keeps getting games and not delivering. So there's a lot of frustration, At the end, I spoke to one of my mates who was at the game, and he said he's never seen anything like it at the end. Like, the abuse at the players from the stands was really bad. And he said the players were just looking at the fans like shocked, like almost open mouthed at sort of how, you know, how strong the feelings were. So it's going to take some pulling back, I tell you, in that stadium. They desperately need some wins. But when you haven't really got a striker, and Jamie Vardy, remember, scored for Cremonese. I think he's got 2 and 3 now. A really good goal against Juventus at the weekend. They've got no one up front. No one who really looks like they're going to score a lot of goals. So, yeah, big problems. This is a shocking result at home to Blackburn. Blackburn are on a good run, and they're improving. But, yeah, Leicester are the big of all these teams that we discussed, for me, Leicester is the biggest disappointment, because they really, really should be in the top two in this wide open Championship season.
Yeah, maybe following on from what Clarkey said on Preston's win at Southampton, this was fully deserved, albeit, you know, Mavadidi missed an absolute sitter And then they had a couple of opportunities in the first half, which obviously the one that Mabadidi nudged in from the Vestergaard header, had he left that, that could have been a goal up. But the reality was, Tote in the Blackburn goal made one save, Salacic made four. And they obviously crafted two excellent goals, really. Gudjonsson involved in the build-up for the first, continued his run. And I loved the second. That's lovely for a centre-forward when that cutback kind of gets angled towards you at that pace and you can just thump it into the roof of the net. So, yeah, they took advantage of, you know, as Clarkie said, a complete kind of discourse between, I think, fans and players, more so than the manager. Of course, there's huge question marks about Cifuentes, but going back to that whole game a few weeks ago, you know, it's very rare that I hear the lack of effort get kind of pointed towards the players. I just think, yeah, when you fall out of the Premier League and some players feel they should be playing at the higher level or want to be playing in Europe or something, it can look like they're not pulling their weight. I don't like it when, you know, that gets accused. But I think in this case, there is just a few of those players that aren't, you know, fully buying in maybe to being back in the Championship, and the intensity and the effort is that's required to get you where the supporters believe they should be at the top.
Yeah, that togetherness isn't there, unfortunately. It's a fractured team. At 2-0 down, they had half an hour to sort of salvage it, and they mustered two shots, and one of them was right at the end when the game was long gone. So they didn't throw the kitchen sink at it. Yeah, it just feels as if they... Like I said, there's an acceptance that, you know, we're gonna get beat here, and that isn't okay. That really isn't okay. And I think the fans have got every right to lambast the players. I don't know what the answer is, because they've got no money really, Leicester, to invest in January. They've got good young players, but not an ideal time to put, you know, young players into the team. Yeah, it's got to somehow foster some kind of unity within the group here, Cifuentes. It's the ultimate test, I think, of sort of man management. He's got to get something out of them before he gets rid of them, because they have to go. You know, some of these guys have to go.
Lambast, almost as good as taunt as a way to express one's anger. I think she enjoyed that, Clarkie. Leicester at home to Middlesbrough on Tuesday. So let's talk about Borough. Rob Edwards didn't have long as Watford manager. He might not be Borough boss for long either. On Saturday, Edwards and Borough went to Vicarage Road, got handily beaten 3-0. On Sunday, Edwards being heavily linked with the vacant Wolves job. What do you make of that, Sam? I know he's got a big history with the club, hasn't he? Yeah. Feels like a bit of a sideways move, potentially. Wolves are the Premier League's crisis club.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd be swapping Middlesbrough and their current guys for Wolves scrapping for their life, but I'm not going to be privy to the amount of dosh available to Rob Edwards. Dosh.
Yeah, some great words today. Yeah, absolutely outstanding.
Should he get offered the opportunity to come back into the Premier League? So it'd be a lovely one for him at some point. I think I probably played against him when he was at Wolves. Are Middlesbrough a little bit fortunate to be where they are in the table? Liz, I've enjoyed watching them. And I think Saturday was a bit of a reality check. I don't think they're probably at the level of Coventry, and I don't think they're a side right now that I can categorically say going into the last weeks of the season are going to be right there for automatic promotion. So, yeah, maybe they're going to be, you know, amongst a number of teams that have still got an opportunity when we get a couple of months further down the line. But, yeah, I don't know. I think given that, you know, this is, as I've said multiple times, a bit of a blank canvas for him at Middlesbrough to really put his identity in place with a team that he's been able to mould a little bit. Some really interesting recruitment in the summer, and they've started the season really well, and the fan base in the main seem to be really pleased with him. I'd probably just stick around and try and get that promotion, another promotion on the CV. I mean, they were well beaten at the weekend, well beaten by a Watford side who all of a sudden looked to have real flair, real athleticism in the wide positions, almost a 4-4-2, some brilliant goals, and they ran all over Middlesbrough, Barr and Gakia down the right-hand side, and Middlesbrough had very little answer to it. Down the right hand side, Middlesbrough's right caused all manner of problems. Down the left, sorry, yeah. I think it was. Down the left. So, yeah, Barron and Gakia
yeah.
supplied the assist for a couple of the goals. So, yeah, a tough one, and I need to respond. And I think, again, we've spoken about the different personnel and the different options in the front positions. But I think if you look at Watford's front two on Saturday in comparison to what Middlesbrough had up there, I'd probably go with the two that are in the home side's ranks. I think they need a little bit more continuity in the front positions. I think that would help Middlesbrough to avoid that type of result occurring.
Yeah, and absolute sort of reverse Liam Manning situation for Javi Gracia in that he's won both his home games since returning. And it's so important, isn't it, Clark, not to take it back to Norwich, but if there were any Watford fans who are thinking, oh, why are we going back to this guy again? That's the best way to get the majority of them on side, right? Because that's where most of your supporters see you do your work.
It does make a difference. It really does. You can be brilliant away from home, but if you keep losing at home, then the fans are going to be on your back, aren't they? They're not going to be enjoying it. So, but that's been the story of Watford season. They've been a bit flaky on the road, but at home, in front of their supporters, they have actually turned it on and they've scored some goals and, you know, look pretty dangerous. You've got to say they've got a lot of pace, a lot of talent as well with young players. It made me laugh when I saw the goal scorers, Kierumgaard got a double. And then I watched the game and I was thinking, he didn't get two. Dumbia got the last one. And it was a great goal, but it just brushes his shoulder, doesn't it? So it's amazing you can get fooled into, if you haven't watched the game, you can get fooled into thinking a certain individual's been unbelievable. But the truth was, Dumbia scored an amazing goal there that just brushes off his back. So, I'd made the same notes. And Gakia and Barr sort of running riot down the Watford left. So, yeah, great performance for them. Rob Edwards, don't do it. Stay put, I think. I don't know if a Borough are going up. Borough's a good club to manage, I think. Don't see Wolves getting out of this sort of funk anytime soon.
We'll come back to Borough later in Tweet of the Week, and maybe that might change Rob Edwards' mind. But let's spin it back to Friday night in North Wales, where Coventry were beaten for the first time in the league this season. They went down 3-2 at the hands of Wrexham. Ever score a perfect hat-trick, Sam?
Ooh.
They're all perfect, aren't they?
I did. I did get a perfect one, but it was like... Yes, so scrappy. I think it was against Wrexham. There we go.
Wow.
There we go. It was at the County Ground, and I think it was 4-2. It was a nothing game, end of the season, and one was a penalty right foot, one was a header, and one was a little tap-in from a Steve Jenkins of Welsh origin. It's all coming together today. Cross from the right-hand side. It was almost an open
goal. Did you purposely put that in with your left, or was that just the way that it dropped? And how quickly were you aware after it going in that you'd done it perfectly?
Funnily enough, I don't think I've ever thought about it until 30 seconds ago. It's a modern phenomena, isn't it? I would say the perfect hat-trick is not something I worry too much about, especially in a mid-table clash in the then third division, Coca-Cola.
All right, so that was...
I'll tell you about Kiefer Moore's hat-trick, though.
Yeah, go on then. It came in the space of 23 minutes. And I wonder if he's edging his way to kind of Timu Pukki, Rob Earnshaw, Cameron Jerome championship icon status, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, well, what I loved about it was the second... And listen, I directed headers in the direction of which I thought I had a good opportunity of scoring on occasion, but that was very much a placed header, I think, if you watch it back. I think he has felt that near post was a little bit vacant and he's kind of just cushioned it into that space. It was almost a pass, which just shows you how devastating Kiefer Moore can be if you get the correct ammunition towards him. And obviously Windass getting three assists, which is I don't know if someone's looked at it, but that cannot happen too often, someone supplying the three assists for the same goal scorer. But I think Wrexham took advantage of Coventry being a little patched up. I think, again, you know, that could only, I suppose, be the thing that makes Coventry falter. I think if they miss a couple of their big players, or if they suffer some injuries and not replace sufficiently, then they could falter. And I think without Radoni Thomas, the fullbacks were changed for this game. They just looked a little bit off the pace, and Wrexham took full advantage. And the flip side is, I think Wrexham have got better footballers now with Sheaf, Higham, ironically the two Coventry lads. Windass, obviously, an excellent technician. O'Brien as well. They've got better footballers than they've had across the last few seasons. So there will be more variety in their game, yet they will still be able to put balls in the box. And they've got the best chap in the championship probably to score headers and cause damage in the 6-yard box. So a bit of a statement win for him, and no panic for Coventry, but yeah, a bit disappointing night and a disappointing performance.
My lazy note on this, Clarkie, was that should ease the pressure on Phil Parkinson, which I've been sort of seeing about. And then I looked into it and saw they've only lost one of their last eight in the league. They're comfortably mid-table. I know they've spent loads of money, but they're doing all right, aren't they, for a newly promoted team?
Oh, they're doing way better than I thought they would. Genuinely, I thought if they just stayed in the division this season, that would be success of sorts. Now, that isn't probably how the owners would see it. And if Wrexham are towards the bottom end, then they might make that change. But I think it would be really, really harsh on Parkinson after all those promotions. You know, it's his team. It's, you know, he's controlled everything in this glorious period in their history, hasn't he? It's his baby, really. And I think he deserves to. I think I would love for him to see it through. And I think he's capable, actually, because they are playing better football. He's not just a one-trick pony that's going to just go direct. If he's got better players, they'll play good football. And I think there's a nice blend at the moment, actually, between that directness and percentage stuff and the crosses and a little bit more ball playing. And I think the signing of Ben Chief was massive in that. Along with Windass. So yeah, this was a top performance. Yeah, Sam's bang on about Cov. This is the only thing I think that trips them up. It's injuries, suspensions, having to change things around, rotation because the long winter with all these games. What they've got to do, Coventry City, they've got to hang in there at the top until January. Inside that top two, and I'm pretty sure that if they're in the top two in January, the ownership will give Frank Lampard some ammo and say, what do you need? He'll tell him what he needs, and I think they'll give him what he needs, and they'll go up. That's how I see it. I still think they're an outstanding team. So, scored some good goals in this game, didn't they? Sakamoto and Efron Clark. So, yeah, they'll be all right. But the depth is what's going to kill them. They just need luck now, between now and sort of January.
All right, well, they've got Sheffield United in midweek, so probably see that as quite a good chance to bounce back. They're top 28 points, Borough 25. In third place, above Millwall on goal difference, we find Stoke City, a tale of two cities and one city battering the other city into oblivion in the Potteries. Stoke thrashing Bristol City 5-1. Divine Mbama with a hat-trick, Clarkie, but, I mean, the assist for the second one very much goes to the Bristol City keeper, Radek Vitek.
Oh my God, yeah.
Absolutely sensational stuff from him.
Yeah, I mean, Radek Vitek has been good, hasn't he, for Bristol City this season, the goalie on loan for Man United. But for anyone who hasn't seen it, the ball's basically, it's the tamest of balls that's just rolling towards him. And he comes out too fast for it, doesn't he? And he slides in and he spills it inexplicably and he taps it in, Obama. He can't believe his luck, really. It's a shocker. I can't believe this result, I've got to be honest, because Bristol City hadn't lost away from home. Stoke hadn't scored more than one in a match since the 23rd of August. 9 games. And then they go and spank them 5-1. And, you know, it was really good, wasn't it? It was some scintillating football. Lovely 1-2s. There was pace. There was dynamism about their football. Junior Shamado, a player that was at Colchester not that long ago, who's got better and better since sort of been played at right back. And he had a barnstorming performance. I mean, his goal was brilliant. You know, the surging run and finish, and he set one up as well. They couldn't really handle him. Yeah, 6 big chances Stoke had in the game. It was totally, totally warranted. And look, Mark Robbins, the sort of appointment of him, he's looking a smart one, isn't it? You know, for the first time in the Championship, Stoke fans have a right to sort of dare to dream now, don't they? I think they could stick around. Put it this way, because they didn't give that much away at the back. They are quite solid. If this can be replicated more often in terms of that cutting loose, playing with speed and dynamism, they've got a chance. I actually think they've got more of a chance than Borough of going up this season. So let's see.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a deficiency maybe in the number 10 position. And I think that's been a continuing theme for me and Clarkey. But so many tight games, so many draws, I think, in the last few weeks, low scoring, fine margin. So if they can get the right-hand side functioning like they did at the weekend, Chamadou and Manhoff, and you've got Sorba Thomas, who we know has been the difference maker for them so far this season, a statement victory in terms of the scoreline, but I think that could just catapult them into a different place in terms of the mindset, the belief of the players and the supporters, because they're not going to concede many. You know, they're really, really tight, I think, defensively. And yeah, I was taken aback a little bit when I was, you know, watching the level of excitement and the pace of the play for Bristol City. I think in the week leading into the game, they were talking about how defensively good they've been and how they give very few chances up. I think one that you just have to write off after what's been a pretty good start to the season under Gerhard Struber. So Stoke played round there aggressive press, it would seem, and to great effect, and score some wonderful goals. And Mbama, again, sorry, I should have mentioned him, hasn't scored since the second game of the season. So to get that hat-trick, that should, you know, transport him into a better place where he should be capable of getting, you know, well into double figures.
Yeah, thanks to him for letting me wheel out Divine Intervention again. But sorry to everybody for not doing a Robins on Robins gag. That's really sloppy from me. I'll move on quickly. We're all about the managers this week, as is so often the case. And Chris Wilder's learning there's no quick fix in his latest spell as Sheffield United's blade in chief. It looks like John Eustace is finally getting a tune out of Derby, though. Another hat-trick in this game. Carlton Morris registering the first of his senior career. We'll talk about Derby shortly, Sam, but here's Chris Wilder. He said, "We're killing ourselves. We're getting at half time. The game was going to be the game we thought. Counter attack, Carlton Morris, into Carlton Morris, off Carlton Morris. That's the way they play. It's no criticism because I'd rather be their manager tonight than ours." Yeah, sounds like he's realizing that he's got quite a bit of work to do with what is essentially the same group of employees that he had last season.
Yeah, desperately poor afternoon for them. Why is Carlton Morris not taking the penalty with his left foot? He got anything about him? I hope it wasn't just the highlights package I was watching this morning, but did they have the Sheffield United anthem playing?
Yeah, oh, it was so funny.
Yes, they did. It was amazing, wasn't it? I've got the note of that.
They cut it out, didn't they?
So, yes. Oh, he did what? He's done amazing, the fella. Yeah. I mean, he deserves a pay rise.
So it's, you feel me? It's called
Annie's Song, but it's also referred to as You Fill Up My Senses.
You
by
Fill
John
Up My
Denver.
Senses. And then it goes...
Yeah. Oh, he's done... He's done a sterling job, just as Sidi Peck has pierced the defence. And Ben Mee's running back desperately trying to get towards Morris. Yeah, I didn't know if it was a glitch on what I was watching, but tremendous. Makes it even better from the Derby perspective. Can you imagine the elation in New Way End when
they do that a lot. Playing the song during the match. I think the anthem has to be played before they kick off, surely. I mean, you shouldn't be playing music during the game, should you?
I think it probably starts just prior, doesn't it, to the to the actual kickoff being taken, and they allow it to go on for another 5-10 seconds. But he'll have learned a harsh lesson there. Yeah, really poor. I think Callum O'Hare, obviously, on the score sheet and had a couple of other opportunities, is one of very few that leaves with a little bit of credit here. They're looking very fragile defensively. I think the goalkeeper, for someone that we've lauded, has been hugely off it this season. I think, you know, it probably flattered Derby a little bit because they're not going to create much during open play. And if you look at the manner of the goals, obviously one's a giveaway, one's a set piece. And the third, I mean, that's a very questionable decision for the penalty. I kind of like it because I think the Sheffield United lad's gone down a little bit easily and then probably handled it. But normally, I think 9 times out of 10, just to save the referee the question marks, he just give the free kick to Sheffield United. So I think they're a little bit fortuitous with that one. But yeah, there's a lot to fix for Chris Wilder. And I knew it wasn't going to be overnight, but the length of time that it's requiring to have an effect is quite startling. Lowest scorers still with 9. Lack of creation. They've gone to this back three now, but still it's not reaping benefits. So I do think they'll be absolutely fine. I think they'll find a way. I think they've got enough good players, but it's the consistency which Chris Wilder's really struggling to make an impact with.
Not the case for John Eustace, though, Clarky, is it? I mean, 3 wins in what, under a fortnight? Might have kept him in a job, but you look at it now and you say, oh, 1 defeat in 7. That's a great run. It's funny how football works, isn't it? You could have said 5 without a win with 3 draws in there, but he's flipped it around. And yeah, interesting game for them tomorrow against Hull too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, look, 1 defeat in 7 is impressive, isn't it? Very impressive. I think it's coming together nicely for them. There's a lot of excitement, I know, at Derby around the midfield too. Bobby Clark, who sort of started the season as a 10, is playing alongside Ozo in this sort of 3-4-2-1 formation. And Ozo's a player I've always liked since I saw him emerge at Crystal Palace. He's on loan from Palace. Big, strong, sort of defensive central midfielder. Gets about the pitch. And I think those two are developing nicely. You've got experienced wing-backs in Ward and Forsyth. A brand new front three. I think it's breathed new life into the Rams as well. You've got Brereton Diaz, Adjumang, and the aforementioned Carl Morris. So, yeah, they're all sort of contributing at the moment, aren't they? So, yeah, look, this is decent times for Derby. It was probably not a fair reflection of the game. It was probably more even than a 3-1-er. But that said, a lot of Sheffield United's chances or best chances came when the game was probably done and dusted. So, I think Derby can look upwards. I don't think they need to worry about being sucked into a relegation battle this season. Got more than enough, in my opinion, to get to mid-table and maybe, to fringe of playoffs. I don't think they'll get playoffs, but they could potentially finish top half, which would be definitely would keep Eustace in a job, I'd imagine.
A lesser Nottingham Forest fan than me would say these are decent times is about the most Derby County could ever hope for. But I'll leave that there. And instead, we'll go on to the game that Sam really doesn't want to talk about. QPR 1, Ipswich 4. Again, we're talking managers, Sam. Kieran McKenna linked to the Celtic job last week. I mean, you wouldn't leave Ipswich for Celtic, would you? I know obviously Celtic's a massive club, but you go up there, you get forgotten about. You've got a chance of getting back in the Premier League, haven't you? If he sticks with Ipswich, who look to be, if not revitalised, then maybe vitalised.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was linked with what, Chelsea, Manchester United, after the promotion to the Premier League. I'm sure his name will be continued to be linked with Premier League vacancies. Yeah, he has to, I suppose, make sure that Ipswich are really competitive this season, otherwise his stock will fall a little. You don't know, do you? I mean, again, it's the potential of Champions League football, guarantee really of the qualifier, isn't it? Sorry, that's a little bit vague, but I think that's one of the carrots, isn't it? Obviously, if you want to go to one of the Old Firm, we don't know his if there is an allegiance there, and we don't know what it would do to the bank balance. So it's not for me to kind of tell him what the right or wrong answer is, because a lot of managers will be tempted by the size of those two clubs in Glasgow. I think, the reality is, though, again, to go back 10 seconds, you're going to earn a lot more money probably to be a Premier League manager, even at a middle-of-the-road mid-table club in the Premier League, as opposed to going up to the SPL. So we'll wait and see with that. I think, there's going to be obvious speculation about him, and the team are looking better, I suppose. But I wouldn't say this flattered them, but obviously the nature of the goals were horrible from a QPR perspective. Obviously two kind of replicas, Hurst, who needed that. I think he's been a little bit under fire. Naturally, he's been the heir to Delap's throne, and he's not really hit the ground running the start of this season. So that will do him the world of good. Sorry, I've not commentated on this chap yet, but Ageli off the right seems to be getting a lot of plaudits.
Spent a lot of money on him. Yeah, he's rated.
Yeah, young lad. And he supplied, I think, one of those headers and did really well down the right-hand side. So similar to some other sides we've spoken about today who have been over-reliant on one individual, Philogene could have a bit of a quieter time maybe in the weeks ahead now that they've got a couple of other front players that are at it. And the free kick, I mean, again, this is not my strong suit, but the second one, QPR's wall. I mean, it was dreadful. I mean, ultimately it goes through it. I'm not sure who the QPR player who was that ducked out of the way, but it wasn't even lined up correctly. It looked like he could have gone round it and found that corner in any case. So I think to concede to the first one was beautifully struck from Nunez. The second was woefully poor. And Rangers, after all that optimism, just a bit of lack of dynamism down the spine of the team, lack of legs. There is options to freshen things up, and Kone, after me lauding him week after week, is a bit flat at the moment. Burrell's the one notching and maybe a little bit brighter of the two. So yeah, I think any kind of aspirations of QPR being a top six side, it's been a bit of a reality check the last few weeks.
Looks that way, certainly. Birmingham, though, maybe they will have aspirations for promotion this season. On the up, they are, 4 points off the playoff places. They put 4 past Portsmouth on Saturday. We were wondering, Clarkie, about Chris Davis and whether he was maybe on borrowed time, and not if they keep getting results like this. Only second win in 7, first at home in more than a month, but they don't come much more comprehensive in terms of scoreline than 4-0.
No, this was probably their best performance of the season. This was big, really big, especially for Chris Davis. Look, I've got a friend who's a Birmingham fan who connections with the club, and he thought he was going a few weeks ago. He thought he was one poor result away from being sacked, and he sort of pulled it around a little bit, and you know, that's impressive on his part. I think the team looks really strong. Obviously, they've broken up that Peck Iwata partnership. Iwata's gone to right back at the moment. Stansfield's playing in behind Dukes. Yeah, it's got a nice balance. Patrick Roberts is coming into a bit of form. Damari Gray is a great player, but I mean, it wasn't really his day. And Keshi Anderson come on and delivered in that role. So no, it was a great win for them. Three set piece goals. So again, a nice one for the gaffer, I'd imagine. Stuff they've worked on at the training ground coming off for them. Seven big chances Birmingham created in this match. Portsmouth created none. And they also missed a pen, by the way. So really, it should have been 5-0 to Birmingham. So yeah, I still have a bit of faith in Birmingham. You know, I'm not writing off the prospect of them mounting a promotion challenge. I think the two that are most likely to come from deep are Ipswich and Birmingham. So, and this result will definitely set them on the right path.
Yeah, big game for them tomorrow night as well at home to Millwall. That'll be spicy on the pitch and in the stands, one suspects. Portsmouth at home to Wrexham. All right, wrapping up the show now. We've got predictions and tweet of the week to come, but let me remind you again of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. We'll put a link to that offer code in the description of the show. If you'd like to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we'd appreciate it very much too. Two predictions then. Not a vintage week last time out. 1 point each for Sam and Adrian. Absolutely nothing for me. So your lead is still relatively healthy, Clarkey.
Yeah, it's looking good. Yeah, 29. Sam's on 17, and you, Matt, are on 14. But look, you know, it's all to play for.
It's almost as if I just come up with something off the top of my head as I'm reading them out, which is probably not the best policy, but it's one I'm going to stick to for a midweek special. Oxford Stoke first up. What do you reckon, Sam?
I think that despite Stoke's handsome victory, this will be a tough game, and I'm going to revert to type for both of these from a few weeks ago, 1-1.
I had my fingers poised over the one and the dash on my keyboard because I suspected that was what you were going to go for. Clark, are you thinking it's going to be a tight one too?
I was thinking along those lines. I have to confess. 1-0 Stoke.
0-1. Okay, I've got a lot of ground to make up here. It's hard to predict an Oxford win though, isn't it?
You picked three high-scoring games here, Matt, just to, you know, just tease it for the listeners.
All right, I'll go 1-0 Oxford. Why not? Preston Swansea next up. I'll have first go at this. And I will say it's going to be a routine 2-0 win for the Lily Whites. What do you think, Sam?
I think it's going to be 1-0 to Preston, despite Swansea being relatively good away from home. I'll have the narrow victory at Deepdale.
Wow. Lengthy away trip, that is. Those Swansea supporters on a Tuesday night, they're going to get anything from it, Clarkey?
A point. Yeah, I think it reeks of it, doesn't it? Reeks of 1-0.
You can have first dibs on the last one then, Adrian. It is Rotherham against Burton from League One.
Okay, Rotherham, Burton.
Millers and Brewers, lovely image.
Millers and Brewers, yeah, you're right. Burton are doing well, aren't they? I think this one might be more entertaining than anticipated. Rotherham 2, Burton 3.
Oh, wow, what a game that would be, by the way. Sam?
Well, I was going to have the away victory for Burton, but I need to make up ground, don't I? So, therefore, Rotherham are improving. 2-1 Rotherham.
Okay, Desmond all day long for me. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. Let us know how you get along with that as well. Listener at EFL, what the place to find us on X. And that is where we find our tweet of the week. It comes from the official Middlesbrough account. They say, not the result we came for, but your support for the team was outstanding throughout. Safe journey home, Borough fans. And then there's four pictures. One of Rob Edwards on his own clapping. A couple of players clapping. Fans stood there looking slightly disappointed. It's really about the replies. Is the reason why I picked this one, Clarkey. Straight away, Jordan Daniels, can't win them all, but that today is a bad, bad result. You cannot be losing to piss poor teams 3-0 if you're looking to go up. Jack Bird, no problem, lads. Only travelled down at 6 this morning for a total bleep show. Thumbs up emoji. At least the boozer outside the ground was full of Borough fans after 60 minutes. Must have been a temptation for admin to turn off replies on this one.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, Simon Walker, the next one, just to top the day off, our official coach has broken down on the journey back just past Weatherby, up the Borough. P.S. the team coach just drove past us. So, I mean, you got a feel for them, haven't you? Yeah... Poor old admin. You can't win, can you? You can't win after you've been spanked 3-0 away from home. You're trying to do the sort of concessionary thing and trying to appease the punters. But yeah, you're gonna get some abuse. But of course, if you turn off the replies, you get battered for that, don't you? So yeah, that is the life of the admin, I'm afraid. Or but on admins, just so people know, there's very rarely just the one. It's normally a sort of a team, isn't it, of social media youngsters. I would hazard a guess at most a 23 or under as well, just so as you know.
I think Dave Burrow, which is probably not his real name, Sam, has got the most positive attitude, which is a shame because his post only had 33 views. Tuesday, dash, sort it, dash, forgiven, 2 spaces, UTB. Any thoughts?
I think probably unnecessary, the tweet. You know, he's leaving himself open or herself open to a little bit of grief there. It looks like the lads have all gone over, unless that's a particularly well-positioned camera. It's a very, what would we describe Rob Edwards' face as? Solemn. Looking, yeah. Rob Edwards, but there's, you know, we've seen that many a time. He's good at the apology, isn't he, Rob?
Solemnly, you know, apologetic, I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, he's good at the apology. He does that well. And the other question mark is that a picture of the away support at full time, or has that been taken earlier on? Because there's not any of that, you know, the arms outstretched. Mm-hmm. That's my favourite from an away supporter, the arms outstretched over
and
the
nobody's
hall.
Left or leaving. In
yeah,
that
yeah,
picture
exactly.
Either.
So I need a time on that. I need a time on that.
I'm looking at the faces. I'm looking at the face. I'm zooming in. There's barely a smile. There's no real smile there. So I think it could be legit.
Yeah. No, yeah. There's someone taking a picture though. That's got to be. You know, just warm up. I think that's warm up territory, is it not?
There's just no smiles. No. And there's a lot of people with hands in pockets, which I think
I mean, you could say there's no empty seats. There is someone at the exit, though. There is a few people leaving. I'm none the wiser. But I think basically what it shows is there's still a togetherness and Rob Edwards will have the support, and rightly so, despite a bleak Saturday in Hertfordshire.
Okay, well, let's hope he's not been appointed Wolves manager between the time we stop talking and the time I upload the podcast later on this Monday. That'll do for today, though. Thanks to Adrian. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to you for joining us. Back again next week. For now, it's goodbye.